Welcome, everybody. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, here with a Farm Freedom update. We have a situation developing here that's more than a bit alarming. Following my comments here, you're going to hear an interview with Mark Baker. He's the owner of a farm in, I believe it's in Michigan. Yes, Michigan. BakersGreenAcres.com is the website. BakersGreenAcres.com. He raises specialty pigs, a special breed of pigs, and free, I don't know if he calls them free range, but open range chickens, pigs, and maybe eggs as well. I'll let you hear it in his own words. But anyway, he raises the special breed of pigs in Michigan, and the state of Michigan is now just days away from kicking in the doors of all these farmers all across the state who raise these pigs, shooting the pigs, basically mass destroying the pigs, and then arresting all of these farmers as felons and potentially throwing them in prison for as much as 4 years per felony count, charging them potentially $100 a day per pig as a fine. That's per day for not allowing those pigs to be destroyed. I guess if they somehow were able to avoid the pigs being destroyed. But basically, this is the state of Michigan gone crazy yet again. Remember, this is the same state that Julie Bass, she was the front yard gardener who was threatened with 90 days in jail for growing tomatoes and cucumbers in her own yard. This is also where Marianne Godbaldo was threatened. SWAT team raid on her. She's an African-American woman in Detroit whose daughter the state tried to put on psychiatric drugs, and then they tried to kidnap her and take her away, and Marianne Godbaldo resisted, and allegedly a shot was fired, and then they ended up charging her with multiple felony crimes. All those were eventually dropped against her, by the way. So now the state of Michigan, which I'm convinced is run by totally insane psychopaths, you know, government psychopaths. Lansing, Michigan is where they congregate and drink the blood of the citizens of the state, or economically speaking, anyway. These people are just crazy, and they want to run the lives of everyone there. Now they want to destroy these pigs that the farmers are raising, that they have been raising for many, many years. And what this is going to do is, of course, put these ranchers out of business. It's going to destroy a very important economic activity in the state. Now, look, I don't eat pork, okay? So I don't eat beef either. So this is not, to me, this is not a debate about whether you should be eating pork or not. It's legal to raise pigs as food, just as it is to raise cattle. But the state is trying to criminalize that, which has been a farming activity in America for, you know, 220-something years since the very beginning of America, and even going on before that. So this is the state bureaucrats and tyrants now trying to criminalize fundamental farming behavior. It's just like Rawsome Foods in California, where the state of California and the county, LA County, is trying to criminalize these raw milk farmers and food distribution advocates. And they raided Rawsome Foods at gunpoint. So there are these attacks on farmers now happening all across the country, and these attacks are accelerating. So now in this interview, which we're going to get to right now, with Mark Baker, you're going to hear him describe in his own words what is happening in Michigan and why the farmers there are putting up a resistance to this and why they're not going to stand for it. They've had enough. They're not going to let the state come in and murder their livestock and destroy their livelihoods. And I got to say, I can't blame them. What else are you going to do? The state threatens to crush your whole livelihood? You're going to just stand there and take it? Or are you going to fight back? Well, real Americans will fight back. And that's what Mark Baker says he's going to do. So, Mark, let me see if I've got this straight. The county officials there, they've got this law in place that starting April 1, they technically have given themselves the power, quote, authority to arrest you as a felon, to knock down your front door, come in, and shoot your pigs. Is that factually correct?
No. No, it's not the county officials, it's the state officials.
But everything else is valid?
No, they don't need to knock on my door.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because they have an invasive species order that gives them the authority to come on without any oversight by a judge or my sheriff even. They can come on and they can take my property.
So, okay, state officials. Sorry, I'm just getting familiar with the details of this case right now. It's the Department of Natural Resources of Michigan, correct?
Correct.
And yeah. They've passed this regulation, not a law. It wasn't voted on by anybody, right? It's just a regulation?
It's not even that. It is an invasive species order, or an ISO, and it was done under the Invasive Species Act of 1996, and they actually added on to the Invasive Species Act, and it becomes an executive order. It's an add-on of the executive order of the Invasive
wow.
Species Act. So,
it
becomes law as soon as it is issued.
All right, so under this order then, and it already sounds spooky, for example, when the president issues executive orders, people start to get concerned about their rights
yeah.
being taken away. And that sounds like what we're talking about here, the rights of farmers, the freedom
yeah.
to farm. So under this order, then, they can, in essence, condemn you, who is a rancher, a producer of pork and poultry, pastured poultry, eggs, things like that. They can then condemn you of harboring an invasive species?
Correct. Yeah, they can.
And that's a felony crime in Michigan?
It is, under the Invasive Species Act of 1996.
And then they would have the authority to destroy your entire population of pigs?
Yes, they would, as well as arrest me and send me to jail for 4 years.
How long have you been raising pigs?
Probably 20 years now.
And I understand you have a special breed of pigs that's maybe a little different from conventional factory
yeah.
process. What's your breed?
Yeah, I got into Mongolita pigs about 5 years ago, and it is an extreme lard pig, and high-end chefs and charcuterists like it. Charcuterist is somebody that makes a living out of making specialty meat products like prosciuttos and copa, loma, different types of sausages, things like that. That's what
uh-huh.
a charcuterist is. And they like this pig because it puts on a good quality fat, and the meat is actually marbled. And that's something that we don't see in conventional pork. Actually, conventional pork is quite dry. You know, it has very little fat in it. And
right.
It's the breeding thing.
Let me give out your website for those who want to read up on this, too, while they're listening. And that's bakersgreenacres.com, just like it sounds, bakersgreenacres.com.
Yep.
And you and your family are leading a bit of an activist campaign there to try to have this rule, overturned, banned, reversed, or what?
Yeah, we think the governor needs to look at this and understand how many family farms in Michigan that he's going to be putting pressure on by this, because our governor has come out publicly and said that he wants to see family farms flourish and the local food movement flourish.
Sure.
And at the same time, his minions at the Department of Natural Resources have put forth this invasive species order that is going to put a lot of pressure on me. It's going to probably knock off about half of my operation if I were to comply with it.
And if you didn't comply again, you could be arrested and charged as a felon.
Yes, I will. Yes, I will be.
Are you familiar with this pattern that we're seeing across the country where farmers are being arrested at gunpoint for doing things that seem like common sense farming activities, like milking a cow and selling the milk, or even, you've been up to speed on that?
No, I heard a little bit about one farmer that was transporting milk across state lines that got arrested, but
yeah.
That's about it. Yeah, I'm not big on the media.
So you're basically minding your own business, raising your pigs as you've done for 20 years, selling specialty meat. Are your pigs more humanely raised, you think, than, let's say, factory processed pork pigs that people are used to?
Yeah, that's for sure. In a factory situation, and I know because I've been in a couple of them, the pigs are on slatted floors. They keep the lights on at night so the pigs will stay awake and they'll keep eating. They process the pigs at a pretty young age, so they're just juveniles, but they're pretty fat because all they do is eat and lay around.
Yeah.
And, they're stuffed in there really close, and the pigs have a tendency to cannibalize each other because they're so frustrated. And so what they'll do is they'll cut their tails off, and a lot of times they'll cut their ears off, too. I've been hearing about that recently. And, you know, they're in a bad environment. The air is really bad, so they have to keep fans on. And, if the fans go down, the pigs die. They're basically on life support while they're in these grow facilities.
Wow.
So they depend on, food, water, and airflow to keep alive. And then they're pushed into semis, and from our area, they take them down to Indiana, and they slaughter them, by the thousands every shift. They do thousands of them. It's just the way that it's done. It's done on this the scale that is just it doesn't involve a lot of people, really.
It's mechanized.
Yeah, it's very mechanized and it's very heartless. When I got out of the service, I thought I was going to drive semis for a while for a guy. And so I was training with him, and I actually got to go to a couple of houses and take on loads of pigs and then take them down to Indiana. And, some of the pigs, they're so weak from the way that they're grown in these houses that a four-hour ride down to Indiana, they would just be too weak to even get off a semi. And, they'd send the migratory workers in there, the Mexicans, and they'd drag them off and leave them kind of in a pile, dead and dying. And
jeez.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. After I did it once or twice, that was enough for me. I knew that was not what I wanted to do. And then that's when I found the local food movement and the, modern traditional farming community, and that's when I got into the type of farming that I'm doing now and have done pretty well with it.
So your type of farming, we would say it's a specialty ranching of a different breed of pig, different kind of meat, more humanely raised. It would seem that the conventional pork industry might be interested in putting you out of business. Do you think that might be behind some of this effort behind this order?
Yeah, I think so, because Michigan Pork Producers has come out several times publicly and said that they support the invasive species order. So it's no secret that they are in favor of this invasive species order. And I think that they're doing that because the trajectory of the local food movement, that's their problem.
Mm-hmm.
The local food movement is being fueled by masses of people that do not want to eat food that comes out of the factory farm
operation. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. They just don't want to eat that stuff. I mean, eating food is a pretty intimate thing. You're putting it right into your mouth, and you're eating it and it goes in your body and then, it builds your being. And animals that are raised in confinement, there's nothing worse than that. It's just horrid. And to eat that flesh is just, people have a problem with that. And so, that is driving the masses of people to local farmers that want clean meat with no antibiotics, no growth hormones, no appetite stimulants. That's the craziest one that people don't even talk about anymore. But
oh, yeah, there's all kinds of chemicals in the factory meat, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's classified. I mean, we know it's there, but you can't really access their records and their data as to what they're actually doing.
Mm.
So we just have to kind of speculate on the data that we have, but we do know that there's appetite stimulants, and that's a kind of a strange thing to be feeding a pig.
Yeah, well, and then there's all the hormones and a lot of different chemicals that go into it. It is pretty scary. But so here you are part of this local food movement.
Yeah.
And then you hear about this order being announced and this original invasive species order. Now, well, let's get into now. I understand that these orders they describe characteristics of a pig that, according to the order, identifies that pig as being an invasive species. You mentioned to me before this that those characteristics would indicate almost every pig to be an invasive species.
That's true. That's true.
Can you give us some examples of what traits they're describing?
Okay. I'm holding the invasive species order, and I go to page 3 of this, and you can find that on bakersgreenacres.com. It's page 3. I can go through all 9 of them if you like. The first few of them are.
Well, just give us an example of what kind of traits they're talking about. We probably don't need to hear all 9. The listeners may not even understand.
Okay. Well,
those traits, but.
I'll dig in right to number 6, I guess, or number 5. Number five says juvenile coat pattern, Suscrofa, which is Latin for wild pig. They had to throw in a little Latin there to kind of confuse me, but wild pigs exhibit striped coat patterns. And it just so happens that that my pigs, my Mongolitas, they have striped babies when they are born. So
uh-huh.
I would fall into that category, number 5.
So
number 6.
Wait, before you go to 6, so let me just summarize this. So the state is then describing which pigs are to be killed based on their color, based on the color of their fur, whether it's striped, some of the other properties include the color of their ears and snout, right? Things like that?
That's back in number 2.
Okay.
But number 5 is juvenile coat pattern and striped babies. So when they hit the ground, if they're striped, they need to be killed.
According to the state.
According to the state, yeah.
This is kind of horrifying to hear as well. People are saying, wait a minute, you know, people in America were at one time discriminated based on their skin color, and now the state wants to mass murder pigs based on their hair color.
Yeah. If they have a striped pattern on them, they need to be killed as soon as they hit the ground. That's
okay.
An invasive species, and it needs. And actually, the farmer that owns the sow, he would be guilty of multiple counts if he were to keep them more than a couple days, you know, because they're going to charge you per animal per day.
Really? Did they tell you what the fine is per day?
It's kind of nebulous. I also have it's the Invasive Species Protection Act in front of me, too, and it gives a list of the different, fines and stuff like that, but it's really hard to read through, and I have something circled on here, but, you know, it's our lawyers have said that it's definitely a felony, and it's definitely punishable by 4 years, but the money amount, we're not really sure of. That was one of the things we wanted to know from DNR, like, how are we going to get charged on this?
But wait a minute, you said 4 years. Four years of prison?
Yeah, this is a felony. For harboring an invasive species, that is a felony. That's like, this Invasive Species Act was actually intended for ships coming into the Great Lakes.
Oh, and people bringing in maybe giant man-eating pythons or something?
Well, no. when they come into the, when they come through the locks, you know, to get into the, from the Atlantic, they come in through the seaway, and they have to go through the locks to get into, like, Lake Michigan and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, when they come in and they're empty, They'll be sitting really high, and that's hard for the captains to maneuver the ship. So they want the captains want to come in with the ballast tanks full of seawater.
Uh-huh.
And then they come in to the harbor, say in Lake Michigan, and they start taking on cargo, and the more cargo they take on, they start blowing the water out of their ballast tanks.
The lake with seawater species.
Yeah, with seawater from the Atlantic. And Got so they it. Bring in, like, you know, mussels and different carp fish and stuff like that. And that's why the Invasive Species Act was enacted. It was so that the Coast Guard could inspect these vehicles to make sure that the captains were doing what they were supposed to do. And it protected us all, you know, it protected the lakes.
Right.
But the DNR has taken the Invasive Species Act and they've added on a mammal. And worse than that, they've added on a farm animal as invasive species.
Well, isn't this how it always happens? These laws and acts get misapplied routinely.
Yeah, yeah. They're dastardly people that have done a dastardly thing, and we try to make sense of what they have done and why they've done it, and it's hard for us to understand because, you know, we're simple people. We're just farmers, and we can't understand why they would do something like this.
So does the Michigan Department of Natural Resources have people with firearms who would enforce this and actually potentially shoot your pigs?
Oh, absolutely. They called a meeting 6 weeks ago in Grayling, Michigan, and this was the first time that I, as a farmer, ever heard of this from the Michigan DNR, that there was a problem and they wanted to get it fixed. So they called this meeting, and a bunch of us farmers went. There was about 40 guys in the room. And when we got there, we were asked to sign in. We had to walk past an armed officer in the hallway. He stood right in the middle of the hallway, so we had to walk either behind him or in front of him. And we were given a PowerPoint presentation that lasted maybe 6-8 minutes. And then we were given a briefing by one of the biologist women that was there, and that lasted maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And then she said, well, there's coffee and donuts in the back of the room, fellas, if you want to, you know, enjoy yourselves. And some of the men raised their hands. Like, they came there, they had questions. Like, wait a minute, you know, we're not sure about what this invasive species means. Is this us you're talking about? And she said, and actually her name was Shannon Hanna. She works for the Department of Natural Resources. She's a biologist. She said, I'm sorry, but we didn't build a question and answer session into this briefing, so I can't take any questions. Why don't you boys have some coffee and donuts and then go home? And now there was men there that had driven 8 or 10 hours to try and determine the fate of their lives, you know, because this is what we do, you know, for a living. And, you know, if I continue to do it, then I will spend my life in jail, you know, in a federal penitentiary. Well,
for the crime of being a farmer raising
harboring,
pork.
Harboring, yeah. I'm harboring an invasive species.
And again, you've been raising the same species for many, many years, maybe 20 years.
Well, no, actually, I just got into Mangalitsas about 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
But prior to that, you know, we did different types of farm pigs. You know, but they would have been illegal as well, because they also carry some of the characteristics.
So are your pigs invaders? Do they jump the fence and invade other farms and terrorize the state?
No.
I mean, you never know. Maybe there are terrorist little pigs.
Yeah, no. If my pigs get out, they're heading for the house. They're coming up to find out where I am, because I am the source of their food.
Right.
And they only live for being fed. But can I finish the story about this briefing?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Some of the men stood up and tried to ask questions of Ms. Hanna, and she refused to answer any questions, any of our questions. She said, no, let's go in the back of the room and we'll have coffee and donuts, and you know, we can break into small groups and you can ask questions back there. And the men were kind of like, no. We got some pretty specific questions we want to ask you. And it got a little louder and a little louder, and then at one point, one of the armed officers that was sitting right behind me, he stood up, put his hand up on his hip, just above his pistol, and he said, "Now, gentlemen, we're gonna keep this organized here. So let's everybody sit down and let's act like gentlemen." So we realized that we were just poor farmers, and the armed patrol was in there, and we weren't going to be able to voice our opinions as Americans. So we
welcome
down,
to the power of the state, my friend.
Well, yeah, but you know, he probably should have lined us up and shot us right then, because it galvanized us. We realized that we needed to do something here, because divided, we were all going to go down. You know, a lot of the men that were there have given their lives to the farming operation that they are working on right now. You know, I'm a pretty new farmer. I got into this in 2004. But some of these guys have been doing this their entire life. And now all of a sudden, this law comes into effect that is going to completely change their lives. They can't get anything but an answering machine when they call down to the state capitol from the DNR.
Right.
And they don't know if they're going to go to jail on April 1st. And I'm really glad that that there are a group of farmers that I'm a part of right now that has an objective view on this and says, wait a minute, this is not just a pig issue. It's not an American issue. It's not a farming issue. This is an American issue. This is
right,
a question
basic
of
fundamental
free,
freedoms and liberties.
Yeah, fundamental freedoms of being an American and constitutional rights, actually.
Well, you're absolutely right. This is a farm freedom and a food freedom issue, basic human rights, common law, even. Do you have the right to raise the food that you choose? And clearly, these pigs that you're raising are not in any material way harmful to the state. In fact,
no.
It could be argued that they're far less, they have far less impact ecologically than the factory-raised pigs.
Well, that can be proven in a court of law. Our pigs, we have no manure problems to deal with. We don't have to load up tankers and, you know, go down the road and then spray that on fields and pollute groundwater.
Right.
That's not even a factor with a dirt-raised pig. Not even a factor.
Now, I'm in Texas on a ranch, and in Texas, there are laws on the books that say anybody, any citizen, including a farmer, can use a firearm to stop someone else from committing a felony act. And in Texas, if someone comes onto your ranch and starts shooting your animals, you grab a 12-gauge and you shoot back. Now, I never want to condone violence, and I'm not saying that that's the answer here, but I find it hard to understand, as a person in Texas, how Michigan could think that they're going to send armed officers onto people's farms and not end up starting a shooting war.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what they're thinking either. I think they think that most people will avoid any kind of confrontation and they will just comply. I think that's what they thought was going to happen.
Well, most Americans do just surrender and pathetically turn in their rights and freedoms, and they do just surrender to government.
Yeah, they think they don't have any choices. It's kind of too bad that we don't teach civics a little bit better in high schools now, so Americans know their rights. Part of the problem, too, is a lot of these state officials don't know what their job actually is. They are actually charged with dispensing freedom, not taking freedom away.
That's right.
The DNR works for the governor. The governor is supposed to be my shepherd, kind of like my sheriff is supposed to be my shepherd.
Right.
He's supposed to keep me safe. And it's his own minions that are trying to destroy our farming operations.
Well, what do you mean, his own minions?
The DNR works directly for him.
Really?
For the governor. Yep, directly.
Oh, okay, but the sheriff, you don't mean the sheriff's minions, you mean the governor's minions.
Yeah, well, the governor has a position that's very similar to the sheriff's position. See, the governor is elected by the people.
Yeah.
And he's elected to do certain things for the people. And so the Department of Natural Resources is a tool of the governor's to do things for us, you know. And now the DNR has made their own rule. It's kind of like the police department setting the speed limits on the roads.
Yeah.
And the DNR has made their own rule, and the governor has, for whatever reason, decided not to reel them in. So the governor of the state of Michigan, is remiss in his duties. And the declaratory ruling that the Department of Natural Resources has decided to impose on the public is unconstitutional.
Clearly.
So therefore, it is illegal if the governor does not reel them in and squash the ISO. He actually becomes
complicit in the crimes.
Enemy of the people. Yeah.
Well,
and
it sounds
guilty of a crime.
Any law or government action that violates the Constitution is null and void from the outset. It has no jurisdiction, no bearing whatsoever. And it sounds to me like you and your friends need to make some citizens' arrests of these DNR people if they start showing up to kill your animals. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to: citizens' arrest of the real criminals.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. I've said a couple times now that April 1st comes around. You know, the DNR has said, this is what we intend to do. And I'm former military myself, and I think, okay, let's see if you're going to do it. I don't think they're going to. I think they're making a threat against the public that they have kind of jerked around for a long time now. So, you know, me and mine will be here. We'll be waiting for them. Yeah, and in a way, I'm kind of calling them out.
Yeah, well, it's shocking that we even have to have this discussion and talk about the state wanting to come in and murder your pigs that you're raising as a farmer, as a rancher, as part of the local food movement, that the state wants to come in and destroy your livelihood for no logical reason. It there's no rationality behind it at all.
Well, none that we see, but they do want to control the food, and this is the first step. And, you know, that during the Revolutionary War, before that happened, the kings cordoned off Boston, and they did not let food in or people out. And one of the ways that people could get out was to turn in firearms to actually get out of the city. So, you know, it's not the first time that a state has tried to control the food supply.
No, now, and it won't be the last.
Yeah, everything that's in confinement operations, they have a pretty strict lid on. They know what's coming and what's going. But all these family farms, you know, it's hard to control what they do. And as Americans, you know, we do not want to be controlled by our government. Our government is us. But things have kind of changed in the last, you know, 50, 60 years, where the government thinks they know better than we do. And I think that's kind of coming around the other way, because it isn't the common people that have screwed things up so badly now that our economy is getting ready to fail and our dollar is kind of worthless. It is our government officials that have done that, not the people.
Well, yeah, clearly. But I got to ask you, is there something in the water in Michigan that the bureaucrats are drinking? Because Michigan is also where, in one town, they went after a woman named Julie Bass, who was threatened with 90 days of jail time for growing tomatoes and cucumbers in her front yard.
Front yard.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did she think she was doing?
Right. How dare you grow food?
Tomatoes. Wow. How dare she do that?
And in fact, it took a public uproar to get the city to back down on that. It was the city planner's office.
I don't know what it is. Like, I'm not from Michigan, all right? My wife's from here. And I, serving in the military, you serve with people from all over the place. People from Michigan are some of the most hardcore people you would ever come across. They can work through anything. They just don't quit. But they are totally afraid of their government. Totally afraid. You take somebody from Montana, they're not afraid of their government.
No,
and their government kind of fears them a little bit, as they
should.
Yeah,
for good reason. Yeah. I've been there.
But Michigan people are really afraid of their government. I think it has a lot to do with the job industry here, because they kind of churn out, you know, these people that are robots that do what they're told and, you know, fear the man. And the DNR here is really bad. They're really bad. They've really been hard on these people here. Many, many of the farmers that are involved in this have knuckled under. I got to tell you that.
Well, the fact that you're going public with this, you know, your name, your website, your yeah. location, I hope you have a way to protect yourself, by the way, just not to say that they're going to come after you with firearms or something, but it certainly we've seen in California when James Stewart stood up against the county about being arrested for selling raw milk. They threw him in L.A. County jail for 8 days and subjected him to torture, starvation, hypothermia, flooded his jail cell with raw sewage, and they almost killed the man. I mean, that's the way they punish people in California.
Yeah. Well, I'm from New England, and that's where the revolution began. It's just not in me to take it from the state like this. What they're doing, not to me, I mean, I'm just one farm. I really wish that every farmer in Michigan would stand with me. I can understand that they don't understand what's going on, but it's not the first time I've stood in the gap for American citizens that I don't even know. But I got to do it. I got to do it.
Well, you were in the Air Force. May I ask what role you served in the Air Force?
I started out as an aircraft mechanic, and then as I went up through the ranks, I moved into a lot of different jobs. But I wound up basically in personnel management. You know, you can be in charge of just about any function, but you manage people.
Let's talk about solutions and what people can do to help support you. Get the word out. Put some pressure on the governor to rethink this and respect some basic farm freedom. So where do people begin to help here?
I would have said I would like people to flood the governor's office with phone calls. But I called the governor's office today, and I was met by a less than courteous female, you know, that wanted to just basically get me off the phone. And I doubt she even recorded my phone call. I doubt it. So, we filed suit here in Maukee County, and then we filed suit in three other counties in Michigan. Other farmers have. So we've already drawn a line in the sand. It's like we're going to war with these guys. And it's kind of a bad situation because they take my money from me, from state into state taxes, and then they're going to hire lawyers to fight me in court.
Oh,
and I've
got
to reach into my pocket to get my own dollars out.
Oh, and they've got all the taxpayer money to spend against you, and where your budget's limited.
Yeah, and a lot of what they spend, they can't even make good on, because it's just a lot of it's fake funny money that they play with. But we can really show them who's in charge. Now, this is our chance as citizens to show them who's in charge, and it's really easy. Our website, acresgreenacres.com, I'm getting fives, tens, and twenties all day long, and it's really adding up.
In donations?
In donations. And those are the bullets that we need to fight these guys, because I got to pay my lawyers. We have a lobbyist in Lansing that we pay, who's kind of the quarterback of this whole thing, doing an excellent job, I might say. And, the lawyers, we have to pay them. It's an expensive process, but it is doable. And with all of us contributing, we can put together a war chest that they can't, you know, they can't go against. You know, we can fight them all the way to to Lansing and then put them out of business and actually demand some of these people's jobs. Because even when the ISO is squashed and it no longer exists, it's no longer a hindrance to American freedom, we're going to go after some of these people that have tried to do this. Because what they've done is unconstitutional, and they need to be fired from those positions. A lot of these guys are knocking down close to $200,000 a year.
No, I think you need to pass an invasive bureaucrat order.
Yeah.
That should confine the invasive species of mindless tyrants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, step one for people, go to bakersgreenacres.com, make a donation to help support this effort. Secondly, I understand the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund is at least hearing you and advocating. Is there any other involvement there with that organization?
Oh, they're solidly behind us right now. They are solidly behind us.
Very
good. I think we're going to have a long relationship with those guys. Hopefully they see the significance of this situation. See, the ISO makes it so any government official can go on any piece of property circumventing the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution. Fourth Amendment, they don't need a right.
They don't need a warrant?
They don't need a warrant. If they think that you may have invasive species, they can come on your property.
Well that right there, that's the whole point of the Fourth Amendment, is to make sure that a tyrannical government can't just walk into your house and walk onto your farm and start killing things. I mean, that's the whole point of it.
Absolutely correct. The invasive species order, like I said, the invasive species order was intended for ocean-going vessels, and it was intended for use by the Coast Guard. You know, so they could board a vessel and make sure that the captain had, you know, maintained the correct discipline for blowing his tanks.
Right.
Coming in the locks and going out of the locks. Not for farm animals, not for mammals even. And no one ever thought that that would happen. But these guys have just, you know, they've done it.
So let's say if you didn't stand up against these guys, if you and the other farmers there, and they were allowed to continue down this path of overreaching oppression, tyranny, stripping away the right to farm, where could they go with this? Couldn't they declare pet dogs to be invasive species? Couldn't they come in and just shoot your family dog?
They sure could. I don't know if they'd do that. I think probably what they would do next would be probably pastured poultry, and they've already laid the groundwork for that. They've said that wild birds that have contact with the animal's feed, with the pastured poultry feed, you know, they can pass diseases, and it could possibly poison or disease the wild bird population. And of course they're charged with protecting the wild bird population.
Well, wait a minute. We know the real sources of disease are the factory animal operations. Those are the most filthy E. coli infected operations of all. I mean, come on. Pastured is less contaminated with any infectious disease.
Yeah, but this whole thing is not about truth. This is about their agenda. So
true.
Yeah, we know that. Like, I don't have to feed my animals antibiotics, but if I had them in concentration camp type scenarios, it would just be dictated by my insurance company that I would feed them antibiotics as subtherapeutically if my insurance company was going to insure that herd. You know, they would be the ones that would make me do it. But my animals are not insured because I have so few of them, and they're outside, and I don't need to insure them because they stay healthy.
Well, does your insurance cover them being shot by the state?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if you can you get an insurance policy to, like, life insurance for your pigs to protect against state murderers?
Yeah. Well, actually, they are. They are insured against being shot, but. That opens up a whole other can of worms, because you have Farm Bureau insurance, and they're big time into the industrial food complex. So
wow.
I don't know how they'd feel about that. I can check with them tomorrow.
All right. Well, anyway you look at it though, and for those listening, it doesn't matter if you eat meat or not, if you eat pork or not. For example, I defend raw milk freedom, and I don't even drink milk. You know,
yeah.
I defend freedom to ranch, and I don't eat beef. For example, it's just personal choice. But
yeah.
I raise animals. I raise chickens. I don't eat them, but I eat their eggs. But the point is, it's not about what you choose to eat. It's about, do people in America have the right to farm? You know,
sure.
This has been going on for hundreds of years as this nation, and then forever before that, right? Farming, domestication
yeah.
of animals,
yeah.
Well, at least, 5,000 plus years in human history. If they take this away, then don't they take away, I mean, all these farmers that are your friends there, they would lose their livelihoods. They would end up on welfare, broke, bankrupt, depressed.
Yeah.
Is that what the state wants?
Yeah. Evidently, that's what they must want, because they can see what the outcome would be. I don't know why they do a lot of dumb stuff like this.
Well, let me share something with you, Mark. Just a comment. What's really going on here, in my opinion, there is an agenda underway to destroy the economic foundation of America. And farms are on the target list. This is the beginning of a communist-style takeover. One of the first things communism does is it destroys the right to private property and destroys private farming and food production.
Yeah.
Now, it's no coincidence. Look at who's in Washington. Look at what's being attacked. The Bill of Rights, due process, Fourth Amendment, TSA reaching down your pants. Now gunmen coming to your ranch and shooting
yeah.
your farm animals. Come on. It's not hard to see this. The pieces of this puzzle go together.
Right. But you know what gives me hope here is they're attempting to do this. They're attempting to do this. King George attempted to do things too. All through my life, there's been people that have attempted to do things. But that doesn't mean they're going to get away with it. Anybody that can hear this needs to know you have a duty to our forefathers, to our American military. You have a duty to resist with everything you have. And not let this happen. And people know deep down inside what is right and what is wrong. I think that what the problem is, you know, I get a lot of comments on my message board on Facebook and everything, and people just kind of say, yeah, our freedoms are gone. America's not what it used to be. Well, you know, it's going to be that way if you don't do something.
That's right. You don't have to settle for that.
No, you don't. If you look into April 17th, 1776, there was a significant event, and it was the shot that was heard around the world.
Hmm.
And you know what? Nobody even knows who fired the shot.
That's right.
They don't know if it was the Redcoats or the colonists, but someone fired a shot, and that began the Revolutionary War. One shot.
That revolution would not have even, that shot wouldn't have meant anything if there wasn't a built-up momentum of outrage among the people who were tired of being oppressed, tired of having their rights taken away, tired of being stomped on by the government.
That's so true. I got to tell you something. This has given me chills, but I got to tell you this. Grade 1 through 4, I walked past a monument. I'm from New England, Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. I walked past the monument, and my grandfather had told me what it said, but I can recite it to you. It said, near this spot, Nathan Howe left his plow in the furrow to respond to the Lexington alarm of April 18th, 1776. And I don't remember the rest of it, but there was quite a bit more, but I know that part of it. And my grandfather told me that Nathan Howe, who owned one of the houses near where my parents lived, left his plow, and he went to the house. He kissed his wife goodbye. I'm a little kid, my grandfather telling me this, and took his musket and headed to Boston. And no one knows if he came back. And, you know, I didn't understand the significance of that as a little kid, but then I went into the military, and I went through professional military education, learned about the Revolutionary War, and about how, you know, 20% of the people stood up against the king, and only 2% took up arms. But that 2% changed the course of our country and gave us the country that we have now, that we are losing now. And then I did my military service, and then I took up the plow. And now here I am, having to lay the plow down again. It's significant to me. It is.
And you're so right. It doesn't even take a majority. It only takes a very small number of people who are willing to take action to defend their liberties, to defend the Republic.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. We are going up against a regime that is very similar, in my opinion, to King George's army. They are mercenary. They have no skin in the game. The people that I've talked to at the DNR, they don't care. They're just following orders.
Oh, yeah. And we hear that all the time.
Yeah. And if you remember what happened with King George's troops on that fateful day, they marched back to Boston because their command and control was decimated. That means the guys that were in charge were shot. And
that's thanks to the colonial snipers, right?
Well, yeah, I don't know if you'd want to call them snipers or not. They were just farmers.
Well, they were aiming.
Actually.
They were aiming for the leadership.
Yeah, they did. They did. They took out the leaders first. And so the command and control was done, and soldiers just started marching back towards Boston, back to the ship. And they were picked off. A lot of them were picked off one by one. And they didn't fight back. They just kept going. Because they didn't care. And see, we are the colonists as the farmers. We have skin in the game. This is our life. We either win this battle or we lose our livelihood. Right. And that's exactly what King George was trying to take away from the colonists, was their livelihood, which is their life. You know? So I think that that's what we have going for us, is we can't afford to lose this fight.
Well, you're right. For these bureaucrats, these Michigan redcoats, all they are is people collecting a salary, people who are just following orders. And isn't that the excuse that every contributor to war crimes has said throughout history? Nazi Germany, following orders. Stalin, following orders. They just say they're only doing their job and following their orders while they gas the Jews or murder millions, with like what happened in Cambodia and China and so many places. They always say that. Isn't that pathetic?
Yeah.
Just following orders.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about respecting humanity? What about respecting liberty? That's what people should be saying, right? These bureaucrats, instead of saying we're following orders, they should be standing up to the governor themselves and saying, we're not going to go out and shoot farmers' pigs. We're not going to just follow orders. We're going to protect the liberty of our local farmers because we're decent people.
Right. Well, that's my governor's position. He's supposed to be the one that does that. We elected him, you know, so he's supposed to be the one that wants to get reelected. So he's supposed to do right by me, by all American citizens, not just a small cartel, and I mean small cartel of pork producers.
Right. All right. Well, Mark, I'm going to get the word out with this interview. I'll link to your website. I hope those listening will consider supporting this and spreading the word. Spread this on Facebook, Twitter, social networks, everywhere. Farm freedom is under attack again, and this time in Michigan. And the countdown has begun. This man, Mark Baker, that you've been hearing here, he may only have a week left before he's thrown in prison and his farm animals are literally mass murdered by the state. And that's not an exaggeration. That's what they have said they will do.
Right.
I mean, that's what the order says.
That's what it says, yeah.
All right, Mark, any final closing comments?
Yeah, I'd just like to say to anybody that's listening, two things. Anyone can farm. Anyone can farm. And also, welcome to the resistance.
That's right. Well, the resistance is now anybody who can think. Anybody who's got a heart, anybody who's got basic human dignity is now the resistance.
Yeah. Well, you basically have three categories of people now. You have those that are working for the government. You have the producers, and then you have the consumers. And a lot of those working for the government are actually consumers. They don't produce anything. They just go in and show up.
That's right. Know? Shuffle some paper around.
Yeah.
Claim credit for things that didn't happen.
Thoreau said, do the thing and you shall have the power. And those of us that produce, you know, produce information, produce produce, produce animals, we have the power. We just don't know it. But the people, the bureaucrats, they don't produce anything. And they depend on us. And we need to start reminding them of that. You know, they won't like that very much, but that's the truth.
Well said. How do these people in the city think they're going to get fed if there's a farmer uprising, huh? Where does their food come from in the cities? Well, it comes from the country, folks. That's where it comes from. All right. Well, in the name of liberty and freedom and real justice, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to share these thoughts with us, Mark.
Hey, it was my pleasure, Mike.
And I'd like to ask you to keep us updated. We don't have to do this long of an interview every time, but I do want, I'm concerned about your welfare. I'm concerned about your liberty and your farm, and I want to make sure that we help cover your story. So can you keep me posted?
I sure will. I'll put you in our email loop, and you'll get updated as we go through this process, see where it turns out.
All right, let me hold on after this. Let me give you my direct email address.
Okay,
but,
great.
Thanks. Thank you for taking the time. And for those listening, once again, the website is bakersgreenacres.com, and you are listening to an interview here on naturalnews.com. Spread the word. Check out more updates at naturalnews.com. Thanks for listening, and take care.